Thank you. I'm Chuck C., and I'm an alcoholic. Hi. Good-looking bunch. If we hadn't had that Calistoga bunch down here, we'd have had a little more time. Hello there. I want you to take note that it's 20 minutes after the hour right now, and I'm going to quit on time. Yes, I am. So I'm not going to tell you very much tonight. I already got a dinner out of the deal, so I can't lose. I got my own rabbi here in this place, so I'm not losing on that either. I'm glad to be here. I want to tell you right off the bat that 23 years ago, I wouldn't have given you a plugged nickel for your fearless leader. He didn't even have a prayer, that guy. No front teeth. No home. Back end of an abandoned automobile. Dirty, stinking. And if we weren't in a synagogue, I would just say right out that he was an egotistical son of a bitch. But I can't say that here, so I won't. Didn't have a chance, not even to get sober, let alone to head up the biggest weekly meeting in the world in Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's this one. This is the biggest weekly meeting in the world. And the man's doing it after 23 short years. And I tell you, I don't believe that I have known anybody in the last 23 years that has improved more than your fearless leader. But of course, I don't know anybody that needed improvement anymore. Oh, me. Tell you a little story. A number of years back is when we had Sandy Koufax pitching for the Dodgers. We were in the World Series for a little while. And Clancy and Luann Sims brought me down 2 tickets to see Sandy Koufax pitch in the World Series. Clear across town. My plant was at 40th and Alameda in Los Angeles. And they came clear across town and brought me 2 tickets to watch Sandy pitch. And when they had given me the tickets, Clancy said, "I want to ask you to be my sponsor." Well, I wasn't going to give him back the tickets. So, I said, "Well, Clancy, I'll give you anything I got, but I won't think of you as my baby." I don't have babies in Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't want to get the feeling that I've had anything to do with somebody else's sobriety when I couldn't get sober myself. So I told him, I'll give you anything I've got, but I won't think of you as my baby. You can call me a sponsor if you want to, but I won't be taking any credit for what you do in this great fellowship. And I haven't. Presently, I'd like to. I'd like to put in the Sunday paper that I sponsor the guy that has the biggest group in the world. Weekly meeting. But now it's too late now. I never had a sponsor myself, because when I got here, I didn't know anything at all about a sponsor. Never heard about a sponsor. I didn't know anything about alcoholism. I knew a lot about the inside of jails. I knew a lot about DTs. I knew a lot about convulsions. I knew a lot about very messy beds and things of that kind, but I knew nothing of alcoholism. I was out of good drinking time before Alcoholics Anonymous was born. Alcoholics Anonymous was 46 years old, the 10th day of last June. I'm coming up now for 36 years without a drink or pill. And I was 11 years a periodic before I got here. I became a periodic because I wasn't going to lose to a bottle. And you can't put up a very good fight when you're down on your back. So I became periodic. So I was out of good drinking time before Alcoholics Anonymous was born. And when I got to my first meeting, I knew nothing of a sponsor. And when I found out about a sponsor and might have asked somebody to be my sponsor, I didn't need one. I already had 500 and a God of my very own. So I never had a sponsor. But today, I figure that the entire human race is my sponsor. Some of them teaching me what to do, and some of them teaching me what not to do. And I figure the ones that teach me what not to do are just as good as the ones that teach me what to do. So the whole human race is my sponsor. But I never had a sponsor in my life. As a matter of fact, just for the fun of it, I never made a mistake in my first 43 years of life. I never made a mistake. I always had somebody to blame for everything that happened to me. I never even had a drunk that was my fault. And the whole time I drank, it was your fault. It was my wife's fault. It was her mother's fault. Now, there was a king-size reason for getting bad drunk. She only had one kid, and I was married to her. She was living with us. And she had a grandstand seat watching me crucify her only daughter. She didn't like me very good. And I didn't like her that good. We had a mutual hating society that was a beautiful thing to behold. She lived with us for 5 years after I got sober. And I'd like to take all the time I have tonight telling you what this program did for her. Sure fixed her up. But I never made a mistake in the first 43 years. All the catastrophes were the fault of the system. All my personal problems were the fault of my friends and my enemies. So I always had somebody to blame. After running out of time, which I did in January 1946, I went to the well the last time, early January 1946. As a matter of fact, it was the last of December 45 when I went down to the office feeling pretty good because Christmas was coming right up. It was a Friday before Christmas, 1945. Christmas was coming up and New Year's was coming up. So that was a little good drinking time. I could even do a little bit more drinking around home at that time of the year than any other time. So I was feeling pretty good till I got to the office. And I got to the office and there was a note for me to see the boss. And I didn't want to see the boss. I knew what he looked like. And I knew what he was going to do. He was going to can me because I knew I had it coming. And he was messing up my life again. So I didn't want to see him, but I had to. So I went in to see him. And instead of shooting me, as he had every right to do, he started talking. And this is about what he said to me. He says, Charlie, I was Charlie in business. He says, you've had a lot of trouble this year. Didn't mention booze. But he knew that I knew what he was talking about when he said trouble. And he was non-alcoholic. So he had it all figured out. He says, I think that I know your problem. I think it's because of the pressure you're under. He was non-alcoholic, you see. And he says, I've decided to take a little of the pressure off of you. So instead of shooting me, as he had every right to do, he gave me $3,000 for a Christmas present. The Friday before Christmas, 1945. To take the pressure off of me. Now, if you don't think he took the pressure off of me, you're nuts. There's one thing that's worse for an alcoholic than bad fortune, and that's good fortune. So I got drunk on the way home. I remember nothing from the Friday before Christmas, 45, till after the middle of January, 46. If I could remember any part of it, I'm pretty sure I'm smart enough to figure out a way to take credit for the last 35 years of my life. But I can't even remember the first drink or a middle drink or the last one. My good wife sitting right down here, she tells me that during that whole period, I emptied 7 quarts of whiskey every 3 days. Now, I don't say that. She says it. And I can't even argue with her because I wasn't there. She was. So, I don't know. And not even being able to say, well, I drank the whiskey, didn't I? I can't even say that because I don't know it. She says I did. And I can't argue with her. So I can't justify taking credit for my last 35 years. 35 years and 8 months, I haven't had to have a drink or pill. Because during that period of time, everything between me and me burned out. My excuses all burned out, and my I wants burned out. All of them. And when I came to, I had only one thing in mind. I didn't want to die with a record. All through my drinking career, I never got to the point I didn't love my wife and my kids. And I loved them when I came to that morning. And I didn't want them to remember me as nothing but a tongue-chewing, babbling idiot drunk. And fortunately for me that morning, for the first time in 5 years, I remembered that I'd read Jack Alexander's article in the Post. Came out the 1st of March, 1941, Saturday Evening Post. First big piece that was ever written about us, Alcoholics Anonymous. Mrs. C had found it, read it, decided that it'd be good for me if I would read it, and had put it on the left arm of the chair that I sit in right now. Opened at the right page. And evidently I read it, but I never remembered it until the morning I came to. And I remembered that I'd read the article. Only remembered two things about it. That drunks helped drunks and didn't drink. And they called it Alcoholics Anonymous. And I said to myself, if I ever live to get out of this bed, I'll find AA. And immediately, the curtain dropped. My little period of sanity was gone. And I was sickened to death, drunk and insane. And I had a lot of dying to do before I started getting well. But from the very second, I said to myself, if I ever live to get out of this bed, I'll find AA. Until right now, I've never had a drink of liquor or a sedating or tranquilizing pill of any kind. Such is the great significance of this thing called surrender. Surrender! Surrender's victory for the alcoholic. Surrender. Far as I'm concerned, probably the greatest line in our book is, we cease to fight anything or anybody. We give up the fight and win. Not only have I not had a drink or a sedating or tranquilizing pill for 35 years and 8 months, I've never had one conscious desire for one, which I am more grateful for than the fact that I haven't had one. Because had I had a conscious desire for a drink, I'd have gotten drunk, I think. Because I always did. But I came to my first meeting by myself alone. Nobody brought me. I got the name of a guy from a doctor in Beverly Hills who was a member of this leper colony. And I called him and we talked. And after we talked a while, he said, if you had a drink today? And I said, no. Well, he says, don't take one. He says, I have to work tonight. So I can't take you to meeting. But maybe tomorrow I won't have to work. He's a motion picture actor, incidentally. And he says, call me tomorrow. Maybe I won't be working tomorrow night, and I'll take you to meet him. So I called him tomorrow. We talked a little while, and he says, you had a drink today? I said, no. He says, don't take one. I'm still working. Call me tomorrow. So I called him the third day, and we talked a little bit, and this time I said, I know you're still working. And he says, yes. I says, you don't need to take me to meet. Where's there a meeting I can go to? And he told me, and it was within 5 minutes of my house. So I decided to go, and I felt pretty good about it until about 10 minutes before time to start. And then I started to think. Now, I came here to tell you two things tonight, besides to tell you that I think you got a pretty good leader. And I'm glad he's got 23 years in the program. But the first thing I want to tell you is quit thinking. Just quit. Thinking's bad for a drunk. That's why we're here. You know, thinking. So quit thinking. We can live ourselves into right thinking, but we cannot think ourselves into right living. That's number one. Number two, I came to tell you I love you. I love you. You don't have to change anything you're doing for me to love you. If you're drunk, you don't even have to get sober for me to love you. If you're a thief, you don't have to quit thiefing. If you're a liar, you don't have to quit lying. You don't have to quit anything for me to love you, because I know who you are, whether you do or not. So I love you. Now I got those two out of the way. I got to thinking, and here's what my keen alcoholic mind told me. Says, wait a minute, big boy, you've been living in Beverly Hills a long time. And it might not be advisable for you to be seen with a bunch of drunks. You'll never know how funny that is. Because the only person that had spent more time in the Beverly Hills jail than me was the jailer. And here I am concerned about being seen with a bunch of drunks. But I talked myself out of it. I said, I'll disguise myself a bit. And go anyway. So I won't be immediately identifiable. Which I did, and I went. And the meeting was in the Veterans of Foreign Wars Hall in Beverly Hills. Great big hall. Door right in the middle of the back wall to the outside. And I came up to that door and looked in. There were about 35 people there. Mind you, this is 35 years and 8 months ago. And there weren't many people on the West Coast in Alcoholics Anonymous at that time. Very few. So there were 35 people in the middle of that great big hall. And I stood in the door and looked at them a bit. And it didn't take me very long to come to the conclusion that they'd given me the wrong night. Because you didn't look like me. And you weren't dressed like me, and you most certainly weren't talking like me, because every one of you were talking and nobody listening. It's been that way ever since. And I couldn't understand the word, but I knew it was happy talk. I could tell that from the sounds that I got. So I knew very well that you weren't alcoholics, or you wouldn't have been that happy. So I said to myself, they've given me the wrong information. This is the wrong night. These are the veterans and their wives, and they're here for a party. And I'm going to have to leave and come back the night the drunks are here. And I turned to leave, as near dead as I'll ever be. Because at long last I'd come and it was the wrong night. And now this next minute is the essence of our program as far as I'm concerned. Somebody in the middle of that little group had been watching me. And when I turned to leave, he came running over to the door. And he called after me. He said, "Mister, were you looking for somebody?" And I said, "No, sir." Well, he says, "What were you looking for then?" And thinking he was a veteran, I said, "Well, if it would interest you, sir, I was looking for sobriety." And everything about that man changed. Instantly. It was just like you turned on a light switch. He lit up all over. And it was obvious to me that he was glad I was there. And I was hooked before he ever opened his mouth again. Here's a man I'd never seen in my entire lifetime. And he was so glad I was there, he lit up like a Christmas tree. When my own family, my own flesh and blood, wouldn't even spit on me. So I was hooked before he ever spoke again. And when he did, this is what he said. "Why, take off your hat and coat, you're in the right place." And he took me in and rocked me to sleep. That's 35 years and 8 months ago. And I've been coming back ever since. And I'll be coming back until you pat me in the face with a scoop. Because I love this program and I love its people. This is the most fantastic society that I have ever had anything to do with. I think that our formula is the finest formula that was ever conceived in the mind of man through the grace of God for obtaining and maintaining sobriety. And it has two other facets that are equally marvelous. It's the best formula for the good life and for self-discovery that I have ever seen. It's fantastic. Alcoholics Anonymous to me is nothing in the world but uncover, discover, and discard. Uncover, discover, and discard. That's our program. And I say, the finest program that was ever conceived to mind a man through the grace of God, because I know the guy, knew him very well, who wrote the fifth chapter, our beloved Bill. I got acquainted with him in 1953 when you people sent me to New York as your second delegate to General Service Conference. And I was there in 53 and 54. And when the conference was over in 54, Bill found me. And he said, "Chuck," he says, "you've been back here 2 years now, and you've never taken 5 seconds of my time. And I think I know why." And he says, "It's time that we were getting acquainted with each other. And I'm going to come out and see you." Now, he lived in Bedford Hills, a suburb of New York City. And I lived in Beverly Hills, clear across the continent. And you could knock me down with a feather. Here's the head man telling me, a neophyte, that he was going to come and see me. And when I could talk, I said, "Bill, if you mean it, We'd be glad to have you. We got room for you. And we'd be glad to see you out there. And this was in April 1954. And in June 54, he was in our house. And for 3 days, we never opened the front door. We just yacked all night and all day. And from then until he died in January 1971, we spent a lot of time together. And the reason I say the best program that was ever conceived in the mind of man through the grace of God was his little story about trying to get started on chapter 5. Of the big book. And he said he was totally void. He didn't have anything in his head at all to put down. But he had to write. And there were two reasons for that. I suspect that the idea of the big book in the first place was to help drunks. But as it went along, they got another idea. They figured that if they wrote a book, it might sell pretty good, and they could make a little money out of it. And at that time, at the time they were talking about the book, there was just about one of them working, and that's all. And that was Bill's wife, Lois. And she was working in Macy's basement. And one of the things they wanted to do with this book was to make enough money to get her out of Macy's basement so they could eat regular and also to help drunks. So he sat down to write and was totally void. But he had to write. And he started writing. And in 30 minutes, he had the 12 steps. As they are now, they haven't been changed in essence since he put them down. There's been a word or two changed. But the meaning of the 12 steps have never been changed since he first put them down on paper. And so out of that, I came to believe that there are two kinds of depressions, maybe more, but two anyway. One of them is the depression of the ego, which is poor me. And most of us know about that, and Bill certainly did. He had one depression that lasted 10 years that was of that nature. The other is the depression of the spirit. The depression of the spirit. And that means that we are void, and when we're void, we are open to the infinite intelligence that's around us. The carpenter man, you know, said, "In him we live and move and have our being." And that's the way it is. And when we feel inadequate, and it isn't a depression of the ego, but of the spirit, we're liable to get it right from where it comes from. And I think that's where our 12 steps came from. Right out of the infinite intelligence, which is God. And I think it's the finest formula that was ever conceived in the mind of man through the grace of God for obtaining and maintaining sobriety and also for the good life and self-discovery, which our program is. The discovery of the self by the self. And of course, it is totally tied up with surrender. Surrender! I've come to believe that the only roadblock between me and you, and me and my very own God, is the human ego. And it has to go by the boards. It has to go by the boards. Because it's conscious separation. Me against you, me against the world, me against God. Conscious separation from. I walked alone for 43 years. And after my sixth year with you people, I discovered that I had a God of my very own. And wherever I am, He is. And I've never been alone since. It's a fantastic thing. And everything that I beat my brains out to get and ended up without in the first 43 years of my life has come into my life since I came to you. And I never tried to get any of it. Many of you know my story. Since I quit trying to get anything, I got rich. Since I quit trying to go anyplace, I've been all over the world. Since I quit running my life and my wife's life and our kids' life, we've become a family. And it's pretty fabulous. I highly recommend it. Don't sell it short. Of course, there's sobriety here. There's sobriety here, sure. And that's worth the price of admission. If that's all it was. But there's also the spirit of this thing that is ours, which is the Spirit of God. There's also the peace and the joy that comes with the motivation of love. I am convinced that the only motivation for any act whatsoever that's worth its salt in this life is L-O-V-E, love. And the wonder of wonders is that if we pour nothing but love into life, life can give us back nothing but love, because we reap what we sow. The great law of justice without judgment. We reap what we sow. We pour in slop, we get back slop. We pour in love, we get back love. Again, don't be afraid of it. I wouldn't trade it for anything I've ever heard about, read about, dreamed about, or seen. And I'm getting up there in years. My next birthday is 80. What do you think of them apples? And the last year of life's been the best. And I think by next 30 you're going to be better than those. God bless you. Thank you very much.
Tonight, because of the length of the other side, you'll have to play this out to the end of the tape and then turn it over and start with the 2 10-minute speakers and the birthdays.
Hi, my name is Gene. I'm an alcoholic. For all those who, of you who are expecting the other Gene D, do not be discouraged. I can't get into a big, long, colorful drunkalogue because about the only thing colorful about my drunkalogue was my imagination. My drunkalogue involves 7 wrecked cars, 2 502s, loss of respect from family, friends, comrades, and all the other bullshit that goes along with drinking. I got drunk for my first time at the age of 14 or 15, and it was on my birthday, and I can't remember exactly if it was my 14th or 15th, but I like the effect. I got drunk on 3 cans of Country Club malt liquor. I went back and told all my friends that I drank 7 or 8 cans, and I really loved it, and I was drunk. It's funny how in the beginning, we drink so little and tell our friends we drink so much, but at the end, it kind of reverses. I was fortunate enough to be brought into this world by a gentleman and a regular mother. I was born in Illinois in a small town, 400 or 500 people. Played little league baseball, sang in the choir, did all the things that normal people do. What I'm trying to say, I was just a normal person. I continued to be normal up until the time I turned 16 and joined a rock and roll band in the early 60s. Things got a little out of hand. I found marijuana, LSD, but my favorite was booze. It was readily available, and I used it as much and as often as I could. I drank early, often, and excessively. I never halfway did anything. Shit, this is tough. You know, I chaired my first meeting about a month ago in a small town up in Northern California called Santa Rosa. And I'm still waiting for the letter from Central Office kicking me out of AA for doing that. After I got out of high school, I had quit high school at the end of the first semester of my senior year because I was going to go on to be a rock and roll star and a barber. Our band had 6 people in it, and 4 of them were going to barber school, so I figured I could become a barber just like the rest of them. I think it involved something like going for 1,852 hours, but I may be wrong, give or take an hour. I went for about 200 hours. I didn't pay him any money, but I learned how to get a hell of a haircut. When I quit school back in the small town in Illinois, my father had already left. He left early, very early in my life, so I wasn't really associated with him. I didn't really know who the hell he was or what he was or what kind of gold mine he had going out here. I came out to California for a 2-week visit back in 1966, and I've only been home once to Illinois since. It was him who booted me in the ass and got me back into school and made all these great promises for me. He says, if you want to be a barber, we'll set you up a little barber chair out here at Myrtledale and you can cut all the guest hair. And I figured that was quite a racket because I was rolling in about 10, 15 bucks a week, you know, and that was all right. After I graduated out of high school here, which meant going for about 6 months, he put me in the service. And that was right at the height of the Vietnam era. And he came to me one day and said, well, you don't have to go into the Army, you know. You can go into the Coast Guard. I know somebody who can get you into the Coast Guard. Fantastic, I said. So that lasted for 4 years, and I was stationed right down here in Long Beach. So my usual hangouts were places like the Honeymooners and the Strollers and the Pike. I got really crazy in the service because I guess what I really got out of the service was a really give a shit attitude and I always knew I was going to have a paycheck rolling in. You know, it came every 2 weeks, so whether I performed what I was supposed to do or not. So I drank and used drugs very heavily into the service, and I was one of the people out there protecting you. You're damn lucky I didn't go in the Army. When I got out of the service, I was fortunate enough to fall into this job. My wife's uncle hired me as a truck driver to do a cut flower route and deliver flowers to all these Safeways and Lucky Stores and all that. The perfect job for an alcoholic. I could be on the road all day with nobody on my case, and with a truckload of flowers, it's pretty easy to get booze and women. I got a lot of booze and few women. Once I got the women, I couldn't do anything with them anyway. I held this job for about 7 years, up until the time I joined AA. And it was there I started to wreck vehicles. I mentioned earlier I had wrecked 7 of them, and only 3 of them were mine. But I didn't get fired because I knew somebody in the company. My wife knew somebody in the company. My most famous caper, for those of you who don't know, my father runs a recovery house up in Calistoga, sobering up drunks. There's a telephone pole right out in front of Myrtledale, which is the name of the facility, and it's brand new. It's about 3 years old. I'm responsible for it. There's another one down on Fairway Street in Calistoga. I'm responsible for it. I hope there's no PG&E workers in here, because they haven't caught up with me yet. I found out through my insanity of drinking and using drugs, I was always looking for a way to get an edge on everybody, to have something you didn't have, to have something nobody had but myself. So I got into selling drugs. If I sold a pound of marijuana, I could keep a quarter pound for myself and still make a pretty good profit. I did this for a couple years, and things were just rolling along good. The money was in the pocket. I always had anything I wanted, a ton of friends, a lot of dope, a lot of booze. It went pretty good until I sold it to an undercover agent. That got me 8 months in county jail up in Napa Valley. For most people, that would be good enough. That would be less than enough. Another one of my insanities, during my 8 month period in jail, I was fortunate enough to get what they call a work furlough, where you could go out in the morning, do your little flower job, and come back at night. Me being the type I am and wanted to have a little bit more than everybody else, I began to bring dope back into jail with me. There's only one way you can do that, because they take all your clothes off, and there's only one place you can put it. To make it a little bit more clear, it's like making a wide receiver out of a tight end. When I got out of jail, my father had kind of mentioned it to me on occasions during my drinking career, kind of hinted around that I may have a problem with this alcohol. I didn't feel it a problem. I couldn't see it. It didn't bother me at all, you know, but I guess he was tired of getting his name in the paper for drunk driving and selling drugs. My name has been in the paper 4 times. 2 for drunk driving, 1 for the dope deal, and 1 for a good bowling score. His switchboard didn't light up too much when I got the bowling score, but on the other 3, boy, he got all kinds of calls. How it is today is 355 days ago, on the Sunday morning in November, after losing respect for my 8-year-old son, when the day before he had asked his mama to go play baseball with him and he didn't ask me, I was unable. I realized that, man, I just wasn't being a very good father. I wasn't taking on the responsibility that I put myself up for in the beginning. I went up to my father's house and I told him, hey, Dad, you know, I've been drinking too much. And that's all I said, and we were at a meeting in Terra Linda an hour and a half later. He said something to the effect, are you ready to go to 90 meetings in 90 days? Sure, Pop, sure, anything, you know. I didn't take it seriously. I didn't really believe that that's what I had to do. But sure enough, I think I hit almost 90. And today, I'm just glad for what I am today, and I can throw away all that shit out of the past and just be myself again and maybe help a few of my old friends when the opportunity arises. Thanks for having me.
Thank you, Gene. And now one of our own beautiful ladies, Michelle A., has talked 10 minutes.
Good evening. My name is Michelle Addington, and I'm an alcoholic. I came in late tonight, and when I came in, Nancy asked me to be the 10-minute speaker, and I tried to convince her that I was not a 10-minute speaker, but she was not the least bit impressed. And I want to thank her for giving me the opportunity to participate in an AA meeting in my home group and for my sponsor's birthday festivities. It's a special privilege tonight. The reason that I was late tonight was that I had to go to a funeral, a memorial mass, after work tonight. I have two friends that I have kept over the years from my drinking time. We've all been friends for about 25 years. We all ran around together when we were single, and then we were friends when we were married, and then we were friends when we were all divorced, and the father of one of these two friends died, and this man owned a bar in Manhattan Beach where we all lived, called Poncho's, for many years, and so the crowd that was there and the crowd that went back to the house were really what it used to be like. If I had planned seeing my past, I could not have, it could not have been as explicit as it was tonight. Most of the people that were there tonight I have not seen since I've been sober. I have not seen for at least 12 years. Many of them I hadn't seen for longer than that. And they've all gotten old, strangely enough. But they all, they're all doing the same thing. The thing that I found more interesting than anything else, they all know that I am in AA. They know that I have been in AA for a number of years now, and nobody would mention it. It was almost like, you know, something we don't talk about in mixed company. It was very funny. But it brought back an awful lot of memories of what those days did used to be like. And God, I didn't miss them. I was not nostalgic for them, seeing those people. Seeing some of them, it was pleasant seeing them. But I remember what it used to be like, and I don't want to be there again. One of the women was talking about how wonderful we were, what a good time we had, how terrific it all was. And I thought you were on a different planet than I was. You absolutely, we did not go through the same time, through the same era, through the same actions. And then I had to realize she isn't an alcoholic. She did not see it, experience it, nor remember it as I do. I still remember an awful lot of the pain of those days. And towards the end, the pain far, far outweighed the pleasure. In the beginning, there was fun involved. A lot of fun. And the only problem was that I never knew when that fun was going to be. Once I took a drink, after the first drink, I couldn't tell you how I was going to act, what I was going to do, whether I was going to behave, whether I was going to get in trouble, whether I was going to disgust myself and others, or whether, in fact, I would go home when I was supposed to with whom I was supposed to and not regret it the next day. After the first drink, I could never guarantee or indeed even predict what I might do. I used to quit drinking a lot in those days. I quit drinking because I knew that alcohol was a problem for me. I got in trouble regularly from the first time I drank, and I also started drinking when I was 14 or 15. But even though I could quit drinking, I could not stay quit. The day would invariably come when I would forget why I had stopped, or the heat was off, or I thought I could handle it now, I could manage it now, and I would always pick up the next drink. I had no defense against picking up the drink, nor indeed did I even know that there was a defense against picking up the drink. And so after many years of being what I called a problem drinker, I was tricked into coming to an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, not because I was an alcoholic, but because I might find it interesting. And I found it interesting, all right. Somebody handed me the 20 questions, and I got 18 of them right. Since, I believe I should have had all 20, but that was as honest as I could be at the time, and that wasn't bad. It was enough, at any rate, for me to identify as an alcoholic, for me to believe that I had a disease, to accept that this disease had a name and symptoms and could be treated and could be arrested if not cured. I was truly glad to find out that I was an alcoholic. I had believed myself to be the scum of the earth, the weak, disgusting, rotten human being, and instead I accepted that I was a sick person. I had a drinking dream last week. It started out a smoking dream, and as the dream evolved, I was smoking because I had been drinking. And I haven't had a drunk dream for many years. And when I woke up, I had again those feelings of self-disgust and loathing and failure and disappointment that you have with a drunk dream until you realize that it was a dream, which is one of the most wonderful feelings in the world when you realize it was a dream. But those were the feelings I used to wake up with every day of my life. Every day that I lived, I woke up with those feelings. I didn't have to have been drunk the night before. I still woke up with those feelings of self-loathing and self-hate. And I simply do not feel that way anymore. I don't even know what those feelings are until I have a dream such as I did the other night. And that was because, I came to this program. I believed what they told me. I have tried to do, and I try to do today, what the program of Alcoholics Anonymous teaches me, and my life has turned around. My life is totally different. I am not the same person that I was 12 years ago, nor do I want to be. I like who I am today. I like looking out here tonight and seeing so many people that I care so much about, that are so much a part of my life, and who allow me to be part of their life. It's a precious, precious thing that we have here. I don't know of any place else in the world that any other organization in the world that you have the identification, the sharing that exists in Alcoholics and Anonymous. I lived in another country for 5 years of my sobriety, and we would have people come to meetings directly from airports, people that we had that none of us had ever seen the other before, and they would walk in. We were total strangers, and we all knew each other instantly. We speak of verbal shorthand in Alcoholics Anonymous, and we understand each other without having to express it. We know each other better and care more for each other than, in some cases, our family, unless they be drunks too, because we have a common bond, we have a common goal, and I hope that that I continue to make sobriety the most important thing in my life. It has been for 12 years. I hope it continues to be. I hope that all of you find here, if you haven't already, what I have found here, and that you have the good life too. Thank you so much.
Birthdays in this group, and we define sobriety here as free from alcohol, pills, marijuana, cigarettes, or anything of that nature that affects you from the neck up. You get one candle on your cake for each year of sobriety. We have a lot of birthdays tonight. We have total 100 years of sobriety. So please, I know that you're all very grateful, and be grateful as quickly as possible, okay? First birthday tonight is for 1 year for Dolores S.
Hi, my name's Dolores, and I'm an alcoholic. I'd like to thank Clancy for giving me that cake. He's been my sponsor for the last 4 months, and I'd like to thank him for his direction and his support. I don't think I could have made it this far without it. And I'd also like to thank my other sponsors, Janet C., Sonia, and Karen L., and the people in this group, and my friends especially. Thank you very much.
Happy birthday, Dolores. We have another 1 year birthday for Max P.
My name is Max, and I'm an alcoholic. I'd like to thank Rick Dolph for giving me that cake. He's been my sponsor for around 3.5 months now, and he's brought me through some times that were difficult. I'd also like to thank Joe Sandusky for being my sponsor when I first got to this group and showing me slowly some of the things that are done around here to keep me sober. I'd like to thank Fearless Leader for the structure of this group, because without it, I don't think I would have really made it. Thank you.
Happy birthday, Max. For 2 years for Dick H.
My name's Dick H. I'm an alcoholic. I'd like to thank Frank S. for the direction and guidance he's given me over these past 2 years in this group, and my God, and thank you.
Happy birthday, Dick, for 3 years for Matt K.
Hi, my name's Matt Kimball, and I'm an alcoholic. A couple of people I got to thank, Clancy for keeping me sober this year, and my friends Harry Schumacher, Cecil, Matt Johnson, my brother John Kimball, my girlfriend Raylan, and everybody else for being here when I need you. Thank you.
Happy birthday, Matt. For 4 years, Tom C.
My name is Tom, and I'm an alcoholic. I am extremely grateful to this program and to Clancy, who has been a good sponsor and a good friend. I had to learn the hard way, and it's nice to be back and part of this group and part of alcohol. I thank God for letting me be here tonight. Thank you.
Happy birthday, Tom. For 5 years, Vera H.
My name is Vera Hall, and I'm an alcoholic. Oh, God, I know this program is a miracle because I'm sober 5 years tonight. And I'd like to thank Susie, my sponsor, for the last 2 years. I haven't been really an easy one with all the events that have occurred the last couple of years. I'd like to thank Jerry that sponsored me the first 2 years I came to this group. The God that you people gave me that I learned how to trust just in the last year, actually, after 5 years of sobriety. Clancy for the structure of this group and for the yard, and that I miss that when we don't have it, and I sometimes don't want to go when we do have it, you know. I'd like to thank especially the one thing I thought was almost impossible is the women in this group that I have as friends. That's a miracle, and because I thought there was only one kind of person you could have a relationship with. And I'm very grateful for being a member of this group because this year I've wanted to run and not knowing where to, but I stayed a little bit longer because of the commitments I had, and I'm glad I did. Thank you.
Happy birthday, Vera. Another 5-year birthday for Fran L.
I'm Fran Longoring. I'm an alcoholic. Hi. I'm very grateful to be here tonight and to be sober and have 5 years of sobriety. I'd like to thank Ruth for giving me the cake. She's been my sponsor the last 4 months that I've been a member of this group, and she's given me a lot of support, a lot of help. I'd like to thank Clancy and the group just for helping me feel like I belong. And I'd like to thank God for my sobriety. Thank you.
Happy birthday, Fran. We have another 5-year birthday for Gary P.
Hi, I'm Gary, alcoholic. I'd like to thank Claude, my sponsor, for giving me that cake. I'd like to thank him for the time that he spent with me, sponsoring me, keeping me here. I'd also like to thank Jim Gardner, my first sponsor in the program. He brought me to my first meeting and sponsored me for about 14 months, and he built the foundation that I stand on. And I can never repay him for that, what he's done for me. And I'd like to thank everyone here that's a member of the Pacific Group for being a member of the Pacific Group. And I'd like to thank Clancy for the structure of this group. And I'm just fortunate that I'm here, and God bless. Thank you.
Happy birthday, Gary. And another 5-year birthday for Louise M.
Good evening. My name is Louise. I'm an alcoholic. I'm very grateful tonight. I'm grateful for a higher power that I've become aware of only in sobriety. I'm grateful for my sponsor, Susie, for her understanding and her tolerance and above all her love. And I want to wish happy birthday to Clancy. I believe that he's touched all of our lives in one way or another. Thank you all.
Happy birthday, Louise. We have a 7-year birthday for Bob D.
Hi, I'm Bob Drown. I'm an alcoholic. And I am most grateful for the fact that I'm here tonight. I'm 7 years sober, and I started this program in and out of it 10 years ago approximately. And I feel good about myself today. You know, if you're new out there and you don't think that you can accomplish what, you know, what seems to come through your eyes that we have accomplished here, I can tell you can be done, because I used to look at people dressed like me and thought they got here just like that. And I got here with a brown paper bag with just what I needed in it. And I wouldn't have accepted anything anyway, you know. And it's taken me a long time to accept the good things that I've achieved in sobriety and things that have come my way. And, you know, so if you are new, you know, don't think that we all got here like we look today, you know. I'm most grateful to my sponsor, Clancy, because he took the time to share his weaknesses throughout his life with me. And that helped me to understand, because I didn't know you could be weak and survive. I didn't get here by being weak the way I was going, you know. But I am most grateful. There's a lot of people in this room that mean so very much to me, that have helped me throughout the years. And, you know, today I can honestly say I love a great deal of people. You know, I don't love everybody. I'm not perfect. So, but I do have a great deal of respect for my fellow alcoholic and the people that I'm around today, and I thank you for that.
Happy birthday, Bob. For 8 years, Jim D.
My name is Jim Dumont, an alcoholic. This is thank you night for me only. First, I'd like to thank Chuck C. for being here. He was here 8 years ago when I came here, and I've heard him for 8 consecutive years. And this fine man has meant a lot to me because he brought substance and warmth to this program, which has saved my life. I want to thank my sponsor, Clancy, for giving me my cake tonight, and also for witnessing my tumult of the last 8 years and being the closest witness. And also, I want to thank his dear wife, Charlotte, who has been a good friend of mine and a good friend of many others. I'd also like to thank my professional colleagues who are members of this program and this group, Walter Gregg and John David, and also a special thanks to Jen Good, who has worked with me. And a special thanks to Donald Schout and his wife, who have been very, very close to me. And lastly, I would like to thank my dear wife, Helen, who's here tonight and who's been here witnessing things for 8 years, and my new partner and son, Jimmy, who is not here tonight, and my dear daughter, Gretchen, who lives in the Bay Area and is going to make me and my wife a grandparents within the next month or so. And one thing about Gretchen is that she's very devoted to me, but she is devoted to Clancy, and she says the most important thing that's ever happened to her, even in spite of her fine marriage and the fact that she's a professional woman, is the fact that I got sober. Thanks very much.
Happy birthday, Jim. For 9 years, Mary Lou F.
Hi, I'm Mary Lou Faulkner, and I'm an alcoholic. And I'd like to thank Evelyn for that cake and for being my sponsor. I love her very dearly, and she helps me a great deal. I'd like to thank my previous sponsors, B.E. and Betty H. And I'd like to thank Clancy for his help over the 9 years, and my many friends in this group, and everyone here. Thank you.
Happy birthday, Mary Lou. And for 10 years for John H.
I'm John Healy. I'm an alcoholic. I'd like to thank Clancy, my sponsor, for giving the cake and for being there not just once in a while, but every time I needed them. And I'd like to thank Alcoholics Anonymous for giving me the ability to live relatively comfortable with unresolved problems. Thank you very much.
Happy birthday, John. For 12 years, Nils L.
I'm Nils. I'm an alcoholic. I want to thank Clancy, my sponsor, for for showing me the way. And especially in the first, birthday nights always bring back to my mind my first few days and first few weeks in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I was kind of a zombie part of the time, and I'd call him every morning, and he'd get me started through those first really difficult weeks. And in the years that have passed, he's demonstrated the way and shown me the way. I want to thank all my friends in this room, and they know who they are. And I would like to also thank my higher power, I've become closer to, especially in the last year. And a higher power that I'm grateful to for the things that he's given me, and also for the things that I know are yet to come. Thank you.
Happy birthday, Nils. And finally, for 23 years, for Clancy I. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you.
Happy birthday, dear Clancy. Happy birthday to you. Keep coming
back. My name is Clancy Immersland, and I'm an alcoholic. Certainly, who turned on the red light? There's a guy who figures he's not going to have any depressions next year, huh? It's not easy. It's not easy being the fearless leader of the largest weekly group in the world. And I don't envy you your job, Nancy, I'll tell you that. When Chuck was talking that, I couldn't help but think, I don't like to think about that. I like to think that I came into AA with a kind of a sense of dignity. But I really was. I was a terrible person, and I didn't think I was going to stay sober. I'm very grateful tonight, because I'm sitting over there next to my daughter, who, when she was born, I was strapped down on the floor above. And here we are, sitting side by side, and my wife sitting down here, whom I didn't see for 5 years, and my little boy is at dinner tonight, my big boy, who was born as a result of being sober. Sheep don't do windows. I didn't mean that. Take that off the tape, Rosemary. And I want to thank all the people who have been kind to me, and I want to thank all the people who have given me the opportunity to sponsor them, because, as I've said many times, I think it's a joke, but it's really true. The more I think about you, the less I have time to think about me, and the less I think about me, the better my life is. And that is really the truth. And I want to say one thing more, and then I'm going to sit down, because my sponsor, Chuck, it's nice to have a sponsor who doesn't have any babies. Gives you a feeling of real continuity as you go along. That's why I call him every week. I don't want him to forget me. After 17 years, you know, you keep calling, this is Clancy. Oh, Clancy who? But he always says, and he says it many times, and it used to bother me. He used to say he didn't have a sponsor, and he's doing fine. And that's certainly true, and I know that's true. He's never had a sponsor. And then I get thinking, there's nothing wrong with it, except I get thinking, why should I have a sponsor? Why should other people have a sponsor? He doesn't have a sponsor, and he's doing fine. And it took me some years to see the difference. And I would say to you, if that question comes up in your mind, I'm not saying you should have a sponsor or you shouldn't have a sponsor, but the one thing that happened to him that did not happen to me and has not happened to hardly anybody I know except him is that he came to AA totally surrendered. He never wanted a drink after he came to AA. That was not my case. I've had to fight drinks a lot, especially in my early months and years. I've had to fight insane desires to run. I was not surrendered. I've had to surrender inch by inch by inch. And I'm sure there'll be more next year. And that's why I have a sponsor, is because somehow or other, the ultimate surrender was not given to me when I came to AA. And so I need help in my continuations of surrenders. That makes nothing I say less valid or more valid than what he says, because he came to AA surrendered and has become as good an example of Alcoholics Anonymous as I have ever known in the world. I came to AA unsurrendered, and I have needed continuing help in order to do the things that have enabled me to live comfortably, progressively more so. So there isn't really any technique if you have a sponsor or you don't have a sponsor, or you have babies or you don't have babies. What you have to do what you have to do in order to live in the world and not have to drink anymore. And you must be the judge of that. No one can judge it for you. I am glad that I finally came to understand I needed something more than my own impetus from October 31st, 1958. I just want to say one more thing in passing. To those folks of you who had dinner with me tonight, I would like to, I wish you'd, each of you, the few of you, see me before you go home tonight. And I want to thank all of you, and every so often I think, what the hell am I doing here? I shouldn't be on the front lines anymore. I should be a philosopher. I should be sitting back. Why should I let somebody else handle these goofs for a while? And then every time I get thinking about that, I think, what if they did? So I'll see you next Wednesday. Thank you.